you have to understand that these people over there wake up every single day trying to plan another 9/11. It is what they do. And we've already...
It's just such complete idiocy. It's just hard to believe.
Why on Western values, but why is it that they're dedicating their entire life to try to take down America?
If anything, I think the Muslims love the West far too much. But they certainly...
core, we are infidels. At its core, they're...
Well, these empty slogans are the most stupid things you could ever imagine if you just stop to think about them.
This is the Dean Show.
Assalamu alaikum, greetings of peace. How you doing? Welcome to the Dean Show. We got an exciting episode here with no stranger to the show. How are you? We got Professor Dr. Kevin Barrett. How are you?
I'm doing very well. Alhamdulillah, Eddie. Good to see you again.
How have you been?
I've been great, actually. You know, waging the truth jihad is very rewarding, spiritually at least, if not financially.
And you said a word now. There's some people out there just shaking. You said jihad.
I said truth jihad. Jihad fi sabilil haq.
So jihad, many people, we talk about this often, that people have this misnotion that jihad means holy war, which actually you're struggling and striving, you know, to get the truth out. Huh?
Yeah, the greater jihad is the struggle to be a better person. The lesser jihad is the struggle to defend your community. Best way to defend the community today is through the truth, not through military means. We Muslims are overmatched most places militarily, and we have the truth on our side. So the truth is our best weapon. That's the best jihad.
Now, I thought, who better to have on the program than someone who has practices free speech at one time? You're still doing that. What is given to every American here, and you actually utilized your free speech as a professor, and you got some trouble for that.
Yeah, well, it was also academic freedom. That's what the academy is for. It's in the secular world, which has its problems, but it also has developed some good institutions. Universities are supposed to be about analyzing how things really work and seeking the truth, including the truth about how power works in this society. So that's what I thought I was doing, and I thought it was what the university was supposed to be doing, but apparently some higher-up political people did not agree.
Mm-hmm. So you got in some trouble for that, huh?
Yeah, there was a bit of a witch hunt there at the University of Wisconsin in 2006. State legislators were calling for me to be fired from the university, and I fought back. So I spent about 6 months in the media limelight. That was my 15 minutes of fame that just went on and on. I'm kind of glad that's over, actually, because I'd rather be on your show than on Sean Hannity's.
So I thought, what better person to bring on to talk about? You know, Joe Rogan, he recently had Dan Crenshaw on his program, and he... we're going to go ahead and play this video. Joe Rogan, he's really toned it down as far as spreading this hate about Islam and Muslims. We did some programs specifically geared towards addressing some of the blunders that he made regarding many of the false accusations towards Islam. So we systematically, one by one, we went over all those, you know, provided the evidence. And he's kind of, you know, we give him the props and respect. He's kind of really toned it down. Mm-hmm. So this is not really much to do with that, but this is actually to do with another topic that's intertwined and connected to what we'll be discussing. So I thought, since you have a lot of experience with a lot of these things he's going to be discussing, you'll be a great person to go ahead and react to some of these things that we're going to hear Dan Crenshaw say on the Joe Rogan Show. How's
okay.
that sound?
Sounds good.
Okay, let's let it rip.
Well, most things, I would say. One thing she's quite outspoken about is our involvement overseas. She's much more of an isolationist than I am. What I remind people when we're talking about that particular subject, why do we keep troops in Syria? Why do we keep troops in Iraq? Why do we keep troops in Afghanistan? Isn't the war over? Why don't we bring the boys back home? And the answer is, this is not a conventional war. This is not something where you sign a peace treaty with a uniformed army. It's a different situation. We send guys like me over there so that they don't come here. We send guys like me over there so that we keep pressure on them and prevent them from having the operational space and timing to commit another 9/11. You have to understand that these people over there wake up every single day trying to plan another 9/11. It is what they do. And we've already...
I can hear you're ready to speak,
man.
Huh? Oh, okay, man. So remember, all right, so he said these people, he's referring to Muslims,
yeah,
obviously.
Yeah.
So they are just waiting for another opportunity to strike.
It's just such complete idiocy. It's just hard to believe that anybody who's paying any attention at all, much less is actually a congressperson, could believe this nonsense. I mean, come on. You know, and this takes us right back to the whole notion of 9/11 itself, which we were told originally was all about they hate our freedoms. And then the wars were launched on this idea, we have to go over there so they won't fight us here. Well, these empty slogans are the most stupid things you could ever imagine if you just stop to think about them. At the first level, why would anybody hate our freedoms? That's crazy. The second level is that Dan Crenshaw is saying that these Muslims in places like Syria, Iraq, and Afghanistan are all dreaming of 9/11, yada yada. So we have to go over and fight the Muslims. Wait a minute. Who are we actually supporting in these places? In Syria, the U.S. created and sustained ISIS or Daesh. In Iraq, even more so. In Iraq, there was a strategy by which the U.S. was able to try to stay in Iraq by arming different factions to fight each other. And so the U.S. created Daesh, ISIS, in Iraq. And over in Afghanistan, it's the same thing. In order to try to defeat the Taliban, or at least make it impossible for the insurgency to fully win, they brought their Daesh mercenaries over to Afghanistan. So in fact, the very so-called extremist Muslims that we're supposedly fighting over there actually are created and sustained by the U.S., and that's part of a larger program to destabilize the Islamic world. And what is this all about? Well, it's about two things, oil and Israel, not necessarily in that order. The major thrust of this war on Islam is primarily about trying to keep the state of Israel expanding and more powerful than its neighbors. That's what we were told before 9/11. That's what we were basically told after 9/11 by General Clark when he said the real purpose of 9/11 was to take out 7 countries in 5 years.
Who was that?
That was General Wesley Clark. He said that after 9/11, one of the neocons came running up to him and said, you know, we're going to be going into Iraq. He says, what does Iraq have to do with 9/11? And then a little later, this was a sort of messenger from the neocons who came back and said, it's actually worse than that. He said, we're going to take out 7 countries in 5 years. And he named those countries, and with a few possible exceptions like Somalia, they were all the countries that were causing problems for Israel. And many of us now view 9/11 as essentially a coup d'etat by hardline neoconservative Zionists allied with the Likud faction in Israel. And there's all sorts of evidence to support that. And these wars have actually been about manipulating so-called Islamic extremism and creating mercenary forces of so-called Islamic extremists, such as Daesh, in order to destabilize these countries. That's what's really going on there. Tulsi Gabbard knows this, and Dan Crenshaw is pretending not to know this. I can't believe he's that ignorant.
That's what I was going to ask. Is he dumb, or is he playing dumb?
That's a great question, and sometimes it's hard to tell. You know, there's a famous Israeli leader who once told the BBC correspondent Alan Hart, the problem with us is that we believe our own propaganda. And people who were brainwashed by 9/11, and so many were, have a tendency to cling to the emotions that they felt that day that have stayed with them. They've bought into this myth of defending civilization against these horrible, barbaric savages who supposedly killed all these people by blowing up buildings with planes. And that myth and that trauma, this is really a kind of a trauma-based mind control, or post-traumatic stress leading to embracing a totally irrational worldview. And a lot of people volunteered to serve in the military based on that, and maybe Dan Crenshaw was one of them. But then they go over there and they experience the horror of these wars, and many of them experience the truth and realize, oh my goodness, we are invaders who are here to destabilize and wreak havoc in these societies. This isn't a noble fight at all. We're the aggressors, we're the invaders. And a lot of these people then go discover the truth about 9/11, like the guys who made Loose Change. Those guys were veterans, and they realized, you know, the full
horror. What was that? What was that called?
Loose Change.
Those were veteran army veterans.
Yeah. Dylan Avery and the other guys had served in Iraq, and they came back. I think while they were in Iraq, they actually discovered that 9/11 was a false flag operation. Yeah. They came back and made that film about it, and it went viral. It got millions of views.
Yeah, what I take strong exception to is that when you say they, and you're saying Muslims, like they're, you have nothing better to do, and this whole myth, you know, like they hate our way of life. You know, these people are another part of the world, you know, minding their own business. If you look at before Iraq, before Afghanistan, the further you go back, I mean, if you look, there wasn't this hostility. I mean, if you look at other countries, you know, that there wasn't a war with, how were these other countries? Were they getting attacked, you know, from whoever? Was there peace with all these other countries? Why, coincidentally, where you have, for instance, you have Iraq, that was invaded and based on a lie. This is just a fact, right? Mm. It was based on saying that there was weapons of mass destruction, which there wasn't. Mm. So it was invaded based on a lie. You also have Afghanistan. Mm. How many? 2 million people minimum killed? How many is that?
Well, you know, there are different estimates. At the minimum, in the total number of people killed in these 9/11 wars is 4 or 5 million, and in the maximum estimate that's been put out by a respectable scientist is 27 million killed, 32 million erased from the world, because 5 million children would have been born if these parents hadn't been killed. So it's a 27 million Muslim Holocaust, according to Dr. Gidjon Palya, who's a Jewish professor in Australia.
This is a Jewish professor now, who's putting these numbers. I went actually very low, 2 million, but now you're talking about 20.
And that's all of the 9/11 wars. That's not just Afghanistan.
Oh, that's not all of these wars that were based off, you know, 9/11.
Right.
That opened the door. That was a catalyst. Yeah. And that now prompted going into all of these different lands.
Right.
So, okay, so that's my point. As if Muslims are just violent and they just want to fight and they want to come over here and they want to invade. Mm-hmm.
It's crazy. You know, the thing is, they had to traumatize Americans to make them innocent enough to make them childlike enough to believe this ridiculous myth, this lie that, you know, they hate our freedoms, they did 9/11. You know, if you're rational, you know that all military activity is basically rational. Some people make mistakes when they choose to do this or that in a military fight, but it's all based on strategy and tactics. Now, ask yourself, would any Vietnamese fighter think that blowing up skyscrapers in New York, let's say in 1970, would somehow help their cause and cause the Americans to leave? Of course not. The Vietnamese knew that the way to make the Americans leave was to give them a bloody nose in Vietnam. And if they'd been stupid enough to come over and blow up skyscrapers in New York, Nixon would have had a perfect excuse to nuke them. And likewise, the idea that Muslims, you know, anti-imperialist Muslims, and there are good reasons to be an anti-imperialist Muslim, to say that, you know, the United States needs to radically change its policy, needs to stop, you know, putting these military bases all over the world, 800 military bases occupying most of the world, including most of the Islamic world. The U.S. needs to pack up and defend its own borders and go home. That's a reasonable position. And likewise, that the state of Israel needs to completely rethink itself and become a state for all its people, not just a Jewish supremacist, expansionist, genocidal state. All of that's reasonable. And so it's reasonable to be an anti-imperialist, anti-Zionist Muslim. That's what I am. But would we really be stupid enough to think that blowing up buildings in New York would help our cause and would make the Americans and the Zionists leave? It's the opposite, obviously.
That's a PR nightmare.
Well, of course.
It's like, who benefits? That's
exactly
the thing. Exactly. Who benefits from that? So that was point number one. I mean, just someone to naively just believe something, like people over there who are eating real food, who are just, you know, with their family, minding their own business. Some don't even have TV, don't watch the news, don't even know about what's going on in America. They don't care. Mm-hmm. But now to assume that these people are just like everybody in their home, they just can't wait to get over here with their fangs and just attack, and that's just nonsensical. So that's one. Second point is, what about all the other countries that are out there? They don't have problems with Muslims. They don't. They're not invading Muslim lands. What about those countries out there? Because that would also destroy this argument. What about them? That they also have the same Western lifestyle that they are assuming that Muslims hate.
Yeah, yeah. That, like, why would Muslims hate the Western lifestyle? The truth is, unfortunately, that many Muslims have let go of their own traditions and their own religious worldview and want nothing more than the, you know, the good material things that the West can give them. If anything, I think the Muslims love the West far too much, but they certainly don't.
That's a good point. They love the West far too much.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, you know, Muslims who love the West too much, maybe that could be a self-help group or something.
Yeah.
but seriously, though, the Muslim world, well, let's take Afghanistan. Dan Crenshaw is talking about Afghanistan. If we're not over there massacring people in Afghanistan, they're going to plot some new 9/11. Well, guess what? There's a poll that was taken in Afghanistan asking what the people of Afghanistan thought about 9/11. And I think it was like 95%+ of them said, what's 9/11? They hadn't even heard of it.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
Virtually every single Muslim in Afghanistan has never even heard of 9/11.
Yeah, so that's what I mean. People are in at their farms, in their caves, you know, out there just taking care of their family. Mm-hmm. And then like Dirty Wars. You've seen that documentary like Dirty Wars?
Yeah.
And then you have these drones. Yeah, and then, I mean, they're minding their own business. They got a wedding, and next thing you know, a drone strike, or, you know, you have people coming in and just kill the whole village. Mm-hmm. I mean, then you're creating these enemies.
Right. And in other places like Pakistan, where they have heard about 9/11, because Pakistan is English-speaking and plugged in to the international world more than Afghanistan is, another poll showed that 97% of Pakistanis disagree with the official story of 9/11. That is, only 3% of Pakistanis believe that Osama bin Laden and al-Qaeda did 9/11. And of course, they're right, because they know what al-Qaeda is over there. Pakistan actually is more aware. The people in Afghanistan didn't, you know, even though bin Laden was there, most of the people there didn't know anything about him. In Pakistan, people are a little more aware of all these things, and they understand that this was a neoconservative coup d'etat. One of the top Afghan generals, Hamid Gul, who was a colleague of mine at veteranstoday.com, came out just a few days after 9/11 and said this was obviously a coup d'etat within the United States. It has nothing to do with al-Qaeda. And, you know, other top-level commentators from around the Islamic world have said similar things. Mohammed Haykal, greatest modern historian in Egypt, who was high up in the Egyptian government, said, you know, when I was up in the Egyptian government, we were infiltrating al-Qaeda, and so was everybody else. The Americans, the Saudis, the Israelis, everybody infiltrated al-Qaeda. You know, they couldn't flush the toilet without half the intelligence agencies on Earth hearing it. So al-Qaeda was basically a cat's paw for intelligence agencies. It was founded by the CIA and their Saudi friends, and it never had any independence. And so this whole thing was a big setup.
Yeah, and I just think as one who is following Islam simply submitting your will to the Creator, trying to be a better human being each and every day, I think about so many prophetic statements from the last fundamental prophet Muhammad, where one of them comes to mind, where he said, worship the Almighty, the most merciful, and spread peace. We wish each other, when we saw each other, peace be with you. Now, what kind of people who are, you know, commanded to spread peace are going to be out there, you know, spreading this kind of like violence that this man is trying to equate with them out there? They're just like that's their, you know, mission in life, to get over here and destroy life over here. That's just nonsensical. It doesn't make any sense.
That's right. But you could understand why Iraqis or people in Afghanistan might believe that about the United States, because that's what they see. You know, they just see their countries being decimated and millions of people being murdered by these invaders from across the seas.
Yeah.
But fortunately for Americans, almost everybody in the Muslim world can make the distinction between the American government, which is brainwashing its people with lies, like the kind of lies that this one-eyed Dajjal Crenshaw is telling people.
Wow, one-eyed, subhanAllah.
Well, I mean, you know, this image of the one-eyed Dajjal. Dajjal is the Antichrist,
yeah.
And this, you know, many people like Muhammad Assad and Sheikh Imran Hussein and others interpret that as meaning that the Dajjal or Antichrist will be seeing with only the eye of sort of the superficial aspect of things, the material aspect of things, and they won't see into the deeper level, right? He talked about the deeper level, but he's the one who's not seeing into the deeper level, just like the Dajjal. The Dajjal cannot see the spiritual nature of things and can't see beneath the surface of things. And this guy needs to, you know, to take off his eye patch and get that other eye fixed so he can see with two eyes and have depth perception and see the deeper level of what's really going on here, which is, of course, that he's been taken in by a huge hoax.
That's why I ask, is he really playing dumb or is he dumb? I mean, I don't want to disrespect anybody, but, you know, just to, let's continue on, see what other things that he has to say.
Like her as a person, we just disagree on things, but there's a respect there.
To play devil's advocate, some would say that the reason why they want to plot another 9/11 is because we're over there.
Yeah, I disagree with that. So let's look at the Osama bin Laden example. What exactly did we do to this guy? You know,
well, we helped him, right?
Yeah,
back
exactly.
When he was fighting against the Soviets with the Mujahideen.
Exactly. He was a Mujahideen fighter. We helped him fight the Soviets. We protected Saudi Arabia from invasion from Saddam Hussein. That's his homeland. And yet he hated us. And when we left, we never occupied Saudi Arabia. We left when they asked us to leave after we defended them and prevented another invasion from Saddam Hussein after he invaded Kuwait. What is it we did to make this guy so mad? And the answer is we didn't do anything, objectively speaking. He hates us because of our Western ideology. He hates us because he hates us. And that's hard for us to understand because it's not logical. But it is the truth, and it's the prime example of why this is a long term fight, and it's not likely to go away anytime soon. And the last thing I would say, the world is a very small place. When we pretend that to ignore things going on in the Middle East, we can pretend that they won't come here. But the reality is that's a 12-hour flight, and the speed of information travels even faster. You know, when we were seeing a lot of attacks in the U.S. and in Europe, when ISIS was at its peak, as its peak strength, that was because they were able to radicalize online. Notice that they've stopped having that power, and it's because we actually took the fight to them.
Well, there certainly are some conflicts between.
Wow. Yeah. Well. I guess
he admitted that this is not, it's not logical what he's saying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He's saying it's not logical. These Muslims are completely crazed and illogical, and they're just trying to kill us for no reason, even if it's bad for their cause. Let's try to get back to reality here, Dan. Who is Osama bin Laden? He was recruited by the CIA to fight for the Americans in Afghanistan. Where was he before 9/11? In the summer of July of 2001, he was being treated for kidney disease at the American hospital in Dubai by an American physician, Dr. Terry Calloway. He had terminal kidney disease at that time. On 9/11 itself, he was in a military hospital in Pakistan guarded by Americans as well as Pakistanis. That's where he was. He was under American protection on 9/11. So the notion that Osama bin Laden hates America is ridiculous. He was an American collaborator or asset of some kind. We don't know to what extent he may have been sincere in some of his statements about rejecting American imperialism and Zionism. I hope he was sincere. I'm sincere about those same feelings, and so are most other informed people. But he certainly was an American asset. And it probably goes way beyond what I've just said, but that's just enough to kind of get you started. Go back and do your research. Go to the complete 9/11 timeline, which archived references to all of these news stories from 2001. You'll see bin Laden treated in the American hospital in Dubai, reported by the mainstream press, never seriously disputed, and you'll find credible reports about him being in that military hospital in Pakistan with Americans as well as Pakistanis guarding him on 9/11 itself.
Now, you also had many of the top Muslim clerics and scholars that were warning coming out. I mean, people are trying to say, okay, that Muslims support people like, people who with some extreme ideas. You had Muslim scholars, I believe Bin Baz, he was like the main mufti of Saudi Arabia. He was, and others, main scholars, they were warning people about him. Mm. You know about this, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. And ISIS or Daesh has been rejected even more unanimously by the global Muslim Ummah. there's virtually nobody in the global Muslim Ummah who takes them seriously. They're obviously a false, even Al-Qaeda. I mean, there are some people who believe that Al-Qaeda was real, and I forget the name of one of them was arrested in Egypt, I think, and there's a wonderful interview with him where he talks about how everybody knows that Daesh or ISIS was created by the Americans. And the evidence for that is pretty much overwhelming. There were WikiLeaks documents showing that the U.S. wanted to create a quote-unquote, what they call it, not a Sunni, but I think they call it a jihadist or something, a jihadist caliphate in Syria and Iraq. And this was a year before ISIS was created. Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, who's supposedly the founder of ISIS, spent 4 years, possibly close to 5 years, in U.S. custody in Iraq.
People can check this up.
American story is the American story is he was only in custody for a year, part of that time at Abu Ghraib and part of the time at Bagram. But then it turns out that there are witnesses who were there at Bagram who say he was in there for over 4 years. And he had the complete run of the facilities, could do anything he wanted, and spent his time organizing what later became ISIS or Daesh. And the official story about that, you know, they'd say, okay, the official story is it was only 1 year. But the official story admits that during that year, he had the run of the facilities, could do anything he wanted, and spent his time organizing and creating Daesh. That's the official mainstream story. So either way you look at it, Daesh was created under the noses of the Americans at Camp Bagram. And if you dig a little deeper, you'll see that it took them 4 years to do it, not just 1 year, and that al-Baghdadi is even more of an obvious, total 100% American agent than bin Laden was.
You've heard about the $500 million that was spent by a UK PR firm. This is known facts that it came out not too long ago of the fake terrorist videos.
And that's probably just the tip of the iceberg.
You've heard of that, right?
The reason
I bring that up is because now that's come out. Mm-hmm. So now if someone will lie to you here and make fake stuff here, why wouldn't they make fake things in other areas?
Well, they have. They've been exposed making fake videos left, right, and center. Many of the so-called ISIS or Daesh videos have been proven to be fakes. And among the bin Laden videos, the most famous one was produced in December of 2001. At that time, remember, Bush had said, we know bin Laden did it, we don't need any evidence, but the world wasn't accepting that. And suddenly, miraculously, this videotape appeared, discovered allegedly by some anonymous soldier in Afghanistan, which shows some guy who looks sort of like bin Laden, except he's a lot fatter, has a different face, uses a different hand, and wears fancy jewelry. This guy is saying, yeah, we knew that the towers were going to be damaged. We didn't realize they were all going to fall down or something like that. So you could take it as an indirect supposed confession. Well, the so-called Fatty bin Laden video is blatantly fake, and I invited America's top bin Laden specialist, Dr. Bruce Lawrence of Duke University, on my radio show, and I asked him this. And said,
who is this professor you invited?
Dr. Bruce Lawrence. He's at that time. He'd written a book called, I think, Messages to the World about bin Laden. He was one of the top bin Laden specialists.
So you brought on a specialist now on bin Laden.
I brought him
on
my show, and I said, what about this Fatty bin Laden video? Does anybody really believe that? And he said, it's fake. He said it's bogus. He said, not only do I know it's bogus, he said, I am in close contact with the top people on the Get Bin Laden units in the alphabet agencies, and they all know it's bogus.
This man, say his name again.
His name is Dr. Bruce Lawrence.
Why hasn't this been showcased on like Fox News and CNN and the mainstream media?
That's a very good question. It's certainly been footnoted in Dr. David Ray Griffin's books about 9/11, and it's been archived in various other places, but the mainstream won't touch it. And I asked Bruce Lawrence then, I said, why aren't all you guys speaking out and saying that this so-called confession video is bogus? And he said, it's very convenient in some quarters to have people believe that bin Laden did 9/11, because if we question that, the other possibilities are too horrible.
Yeah. What if someone says, what are you defending bin Laden? Are you a bin Laden fan? What would you say?
What I would say is that, I can't really judge who bin Laden was and why he did what he did, but I'm pretty sure he was a CIA asset, and I don't really approve of that. As far as his feelings about 9/11, he's on the record deploring 9/11 and saying this was un-Islamic. Repeatedly, in September and October of 2001, right after it happened, bin Laden gave interviews with Pakistani newspapers, and he was quoted as saying that 9/11 was done by people in the United States with their own agenda. He hinted that it was the Zionists, and he said that this was un-Islamic. It is un-Islamic to kill innocent women and children, and he deplored 9/11. And that was the last we ever heard from the real bin Laden, because everything since then has either been proven bogus. Not only that fatty bin Laden confession video has been proven bogus, but most of the other so-called bin Laden videos are equally obviously bogus. There are a couple of audio tapes that we can't prove are bogus, but since almost all of the, you know, since there's so many that we can prove are bogus, somebody put out lots and lots of bogus bin Laden videos after the fall of 2001. And the reasonable assumption is that they're all bogus.
Let's continue on and see what else Joe and Dan have to say.
Well, there certainly are some conflicts between their ideology and Western ideology, but why, and Western values, but why is it that they're dedicating their entire life to try to take down America?
Well, I mean,
this is always the question.
It
for
is
us,
a question,
the civilians.
And it's you'd almost have to ask them exactly why, right? But I mean, at its core, we are infidels. At its core, they're taking an extreme view of Islamic fundamentalism and believing that we are infidels that must be destroyed. I mean,
okay, so he answered it. So I like what. Okay, Joel started. He's going to play devil's advocate, and he's the one kind of pushing it, like. Doesn't really make sense. He's coming up and pretty much questioning what he's saying. So now he's saying we got to ask them. So we're here. We're the them. We're the Muslims, right? But we're not extreme Muslims. Islam doesn't call us to be extreme. Maybe extremely kind and merciful towards the creation. But now the point is that it's because his answer is because they're infidels, which actually that's a Christian term, isn't it?
Absolutely. That's a terrible. The term that. They pretend that they're translating is kafir, but that comes from kufr, which its root meaning is ingratitude. And so what it really gets down to is kufr is that being ungrateful for the beautiful creation that God or Allah has given us. And it can be ingratitude when the prophet comes with the truth and turning away from that and rejecting it and lying about it. That's another form of ingratitude. So that's what the term means. But it certainly is not a blanket term to disparage all non-Muslims or non-nominal Muslims. You know, we Muslims understand that the message of the Quran is something that it's universal, and that the human nature is universal too. We have a fitra, which is basically good. And so the people who are born as something else are, number one, they may very well come to Islam as we understand it, and number two, they are quite capable of being good people within their own traditions. That's why whenever Islam is in power, it protects religious minorities, unlike Christianity, which has a very bad history of trying to force everybody to convert to Christianity. Islam traditionally has not done that. And we're not talking about ideal Islam. We're talking about real world Islam, that even in real world Islam, with power hungry potentates, not really obeying Islam the way they should, they still have a pretty good record of protecting religious minorities. So this notion of, oh, we just have, you know, attacking and making war and killing all the, you know, the kuffar and all of that, that's insanity. And, you know, maybe there are, you know, 0.1% of Muslims get brainwashed and believe that kind of insanity, but it's mostly people like this guy, Crenshaw, who are making up a big lie. It's like a blood libel. You know, Jews talk about blood libels when they say that Jews roast and eat Christian babies. Well, this is a blood libel against Muslims, the idea that Muslims want to go out and kill everybody else. Look around at the real world. Go visit a Muslim country. Hang out with Muslims, and you quickly find out that that's not the case.
That goes back to what I was saying. If you look at the history for hundreds of years, we didn't have all of this, with all these wars and all this drama and everything. You know, there was some peace and some stability. But now when all these wars start, you know, the average person wants peace, right? Muslims want peace. They want to live in peace with their neighbors. They want to live in peace, first and foremost, with their creator, with their families. So they're painting out Muslims to be these violent extremists. And now they're the others. So it's easier to go ahead and invade them, kill them. But then what about people say, the people who don't, there are, someone would say, well, who wouldn't want peace? but the people that then won't earn a profit when there is peace.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And that's what this really boils down to. You know, there's a big lie out there saying that all the wars are created by religion. And that's not true. Wars are mainly about struggles for resources and power, material power. And it's the power-hungry, greedy people who are driving wars in all cultures. That includes the Muslim cultures. You know, we haven't always had good leadership, Eddie. In the Muslim, if you look at Muslim history, there have been a lot of blood-soaked dictators running Muslim communities and getting away with it, too. You know, we haven't been perfect. But let's not blame that on the religion. Even look at the Christian world. There have been all sorts of blood-soaked dictators and kings and potentates in the Christian world. They don't follow Christianity. They're greedy for power and money. That's where war comes from. And so today, who's profiting from war? It isn't really the Muslim countries. It's the people selling the weapons to the Muslim countries. And look at Trump and his friends at General Dynamics selling huge piles of weapons to the Saudis, who are then massacring the people of Yemen in what amounts to a genocide. This is all being driven by money and power. The Saudi leadership wants to get money and power by taking over influence in Yemen. The American leadership wants to sell all these weapons and make lots of money. That's where this is all coming from. And what did 9/11 do? It doubled the U.S. military budget, and people made billions and billions of dollars off of that. That's what this is really about.
So those would be the people who wouldn't want peace are the people who profit during war, because war is big business.
Absolutely. That's the bottom line of war. War is a racket, as General Smedley Butler brilliantly put it. You know, he's one of my
war
American
heroes. War is a racket, huh?
War is a racket. That's the name of General Smedley Butler's great book. He's a true American hero. He's a whistleblower, a Marine Corps general who told the truth about the real nature of war.
There is another professor here. I want to get your take on what he had to say. His name is David Ray Griffin. He said pretty much all the evidence that America was attacked by Muslims on 9/11, when subject to critical scrutiny, appears to have been fabricated.
That's absolutely
who is David? This is an academic. This is a professor emeritus. You know, someone who also now is coming out, putting his career on the line and everything to speak, to say this, to defend Muslims.
David Ray Griffin has written, I believe, about 15 books on 9/11. He is the greatest scholar on the subject of 9/11 in any country. And he is the co-founder of the Process School of Christian Theology, which is the most advanced and respected school of Christian theology. It's the only one that secular intellectuals really take seriously. He and John Cobb founded that school. So these guys are the greatest Christian theologians of our time.
He's Christian also now.
Yeah. Protestant. He taught at Claremont. He's retired now. And he and John Cobb have both been very outspoken in pointing out that obviously Muslims didn't do 9/11. Obviously, all of this was fabricated. The official story of 9/11 is a complete joke. You know, the 9/11 Commission, for example, said that of all of these so-called hijacker pilots, who we know, by the way, were not even on the planes, the best pilot was a guy named Hani Hanjour, who supposedly flew an amazing stunt flight into the Pentagon. Well, Hani Hanjour was such a bad pilot that he couldn't even be allowed to solo in a Cessna training aircraft. And yet the official story has him taking over the controls of a 757 at 30,000 feet over Ohio, turning it around, making a beeline for Washington, D.C., flying over the Pentagon for no reason. If you were going to hit the Pentagon in that situation, you just dive into it. But no, he goes over the Pentagon and then does a corkscrew dive, dropping more than 8,000 feet in 2 minutes, which is enough to pull G-forces to knock everybody out on the plane, and then come straight down to the ground and then level out along the ground and hit the newly reinforced and largely empty part of the Pentagon, killing only the accountants and some Office of Naval Intelligence guys. And the accountants were hot on the trail of the $2.3 trillion missing from the Pentagon. And guess what? Rumsfeld announced that $2.3 trillion was missing from the Pentagon. He announced it the night before on September 10th, 2001. This official story is insane. A guy who can't fly does the least possible damage to the Pentagon by taking out the accountants who are looking for $2.3 trillion, seven times the annual military budget, which disappeared. Seven times the annual military budget disappeared the night before 9/11, and as announced by Rumsfeld. I mean, this official story is just beyond belief. It's still shocking to me that there's anybody who even accepts it.
But now, people hearing this for the first time, I mean, you get kind of nervous to talk about this because right away people start to associate you with being, you know, they put labels on you. Mm-hmm. And now someone might say, well, you're just a conspiracy theorist. You're, you know, making this stuff up. There's an official story. There was a committee, you know, of intellectual scientists, whoever the case, and this is what they confirmed. And now you're who are you to come question this?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, there hasn't really been any significant group of experts of any kind who have confirmed this official story. There was the NIST group that looked at what happened to these three skyscrapers and the entire World Trade Center. Every building in the World Trade Center was totaled and destroyed, most notably the three skyscrapers that are blown up in obvious controlled demolitions. But the other buildings were blown up too with explosives. A huge, you know, the giant crater blew away most of building three. And building five, likewise, blown up. Anyway, the people tasked with explaining this officially for the government were all on the government's payroll. And they still had a terrible time coming up with any way to explain that. But the 9/11 Commission report, which is the official story of the whole event, doesn't even mention Building 7, the most obvious Achilles heel in the official
story.
They don't even mention it. There's nothing. Zero.
What about this new study from the University of Alaska that was... I believe it was a $300,000 study. Hmm. What did they conclude?
That's led by Dr. Halsey of the University of Alaska. And all these
Why is he hosting a study if there's an official report? What would motivate this? I mean, how would a University of Alaska go ahead and get funding to do a study like this? Why would they be doing it?
I think they might have had to get some independent funding to do it, as I recall.
So this is an independent study?
Yeah, yeah.
So these are the more ones that I assume you can trust. If it's independent.
Well, certainly. And that's been the problem, is that the official stuff has all come from people on the payroll of the U.S. government.
Yeah.
Dr. Halsey of the University of Alaska and his colleagues, of course, looked at Building 7 before they, you know, when they were first conceiving of having to look into this more closely, and said, this is ridiculous. I mean, this is, if you actually talk to these guys, and there are many thousands of architects and engineers who've signed on at Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth, and if you actually talk to these people, you know, they're not as careful as they are in their written work and so on. They try to be very professional. But if you sit down and talk with them, they will just, you know, tell you how absurd this official story is, how obvious it is that not just Building 7, which is the one that the untrained eye can see is a controlled demolition, but the towers as well are being blown up, that these buildings couldn't possibly just fall down for random causes, as the official story indicates.
So what would be the motive of someone like this coming out from this university? This is a professor, another...
Right, yeah, there are thousands of people like this.
Thousands,
If you go to Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth, you'll see more than 2,000 architects and engineers who've risked their I don't know if they risk their lives, but they're certainly risking their reputations to tell the truth, and they're doing it out of their hearts.
They're doing jihad.
Yeah, they're doing the truth jihad too. Yeah, yeah. Most of them are not Muslims. A few are.
They're struggling and striving to get what they believe is the truth, to get it out. What did this study confirm at the end again?
Well, Dr. Halsey's study from the University of Alaska, I believe, is showing in great detail why Building 7 had to be a controlled demolition.
Yeah. Most people don't know that Building 7, it wasn't hit by a plane.
That's right. And it fell down at 5:20 in the afternoon. See, most of the World Trade Center was destroyed in the bombings around 9 in the morning, 9 to 10, actually closer to 10 in the morning. But Building 7 just fell down for no apparent reason at 5:20 in the afternoon, after a countdown to demolition went out over police radio, after the commercial radio station had actually announced that it was going to be taken down. A crowd gathered around Building 7 to watch it come down, and then the police pushed people back, forced them away from the building, saying, that building's about to come down. You can see the videos of this. And then a police radio countdown went out, 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, and at zero, the building just goes straight down into the earth as if it were sort of an elevator going into the earth, a classic controlled demolition.
What's that top European demolition expert?
Yeah, Danny Jawinko, Allah yarhamhu, was the top expert in Europe on demolitions. And he was shown Building 7 by a Dutch media company or some journalists. And he looked at this and he said, well, this is obviously a controlled demolition. This is one of the greatest controlled demolitions I've ever seen. Very professional, perfectly done. And they said, you know, this happened on 9/11. And he said, oh, really? And he was shocked. Well, I forget how long thereafter, maybe I think it was months or a year or something after that, he died in a very strange car crash. So there's also the top demolition expert in the UK who has stated the same thing, but off the record, to Alan Hart, the former lead BBC correspondent for the Middle East. And Alan Hart came on my radio show almost 10 years ago to break the news that the top British demolition expert also said that these were obvious demolitions. And Alan Hart himself said that, of course, 9/11 was a coup d'etat, and Alan believed that the Israelis were behind it.
Is it true that there's a new poll that shows that more and more and more Americans are questioning the official story, and they're also wanting a new investigation?
Well, the polls have been all over the map, but if you add up all the polls that have been done since it happened, by about 2006, the country was split, with about a third of the people not believing siding with the 9/11 truthers, about a third of the people strongly identify with the official story, and about a third of the people are sort of in the middle.
Yeah.
One poll actually showed that it was, I think it was 82% think that the government is not telling the full truth.
So it's pretty much, it's not like, because someone who's a conspiracy theorist, he's putting up a plan saying, okay, this is how it happened, this is what they did. These are just people who are just saying it doesn't make sense. It's not logical what's going on. Like Building 7 didn't get hit by a plane, and now just people are coming out, experts, you know, scientists, engineers, former presidential candidates,
Paul Wellstone. Well, yeah. Paul Wellstone was murdered in 2002 because he opposed the Iraq War, and allegedly because he wanted to investigate 9/11. He was a U.S. Senator. He was the leading left-leaning Democrat in the U.S. Senate. And
his name again is
Paul Wellstone.
Yeah.
1 week before he died, he was running for re-election. Dick Cheney had personally targeted him and said, you know, we are going to take Wellstone out of the Senate one way or another. And then 1 week before he died, Cheney threatened Wellstone, saying that if you continue with your obstructionism, there will be the most severe possible consequences to the state of Minnesota and to you personally. Then 1 week later, Wellstone's plane was taken down. He, his wife, and his daughter all died, along with his campaign staff. They all died in that plane crash. And there's all sorts of evidence that plane crash happened through an EMF weapon. And for the details, you can Google the film Wellstone, They Killed Him.
Film out there.
Yeah, well, and there's a book called American Assassination, The Strange Death of Paul Wellstone, written by two professors, Four Arrows and Jim Fetzer.
Let me get your reaction to this.
So there are all kinds of reasons we thought we were set up to fail. We got started late. We had a very short time frame. Indeed, we had to get it extended. We did not have enough money. They were afraid we were going to hang somebody, that we would point the finger.
Lee and I write in our book that we think the commission in many ways was set up to fail, because we had not enough money. We didn't have enough time. We'd been appointed by the most partisan people in Washington.
Who are these guys? Are they they were the ones who were running the commission?
Well,
the investigation?
Those were the co-chairs, Keene and Hamilton. They're the co-chairs of the 9/11 commission. So theoretically, they're in charge, but they weren't really in charge. As they said, they were grossly underfunded. They had about $10 million or something like that. By contrast, I believe it was over $50 million was spent investigating Clinton and Lewinsky.
I was just about to ask you.
The Challenger disaster was $100 million or something. So, yeah, 9/11, they give them a tiny fraction of what they should have. And then Keene and Hamilton just sort of were the figureheads, but the real work was all done by a guy named Dr. Philip Zelikow. Philip Zelikow is a history professor from Virginia who's a neocon. He's a close associate of people like Condoleezza Rice. He was appointed by Bush and Cheney to rewrite American military strategy, so he's a total insider. And he describes himself as an expert in the creation and maintenance of public myths. And his example of that is like Pearl Harbor. The American people have been taught this myth about how Pearl Harbor was a surprise attack by the Japanese. Pearl Harbor is what brought the United States into World War II. Before Pearl Harbor, this Japanese attack, the American people were against joining World War II. But because of this attack on Pearl Harbor, the American people were stampeded into unanimously supporting this war, and Pearl Harbor permanently changed the American psyche. Before Pearl Harbor, Americans were isolationists. Since Pearl Harbor, Americans go along with this big empire trying to rule the world. So Zelikow admits that his job is he creates and maintains public myths, like the myth of the pernicious Japanese surprise attack on Pearl Harbor. So additionally, Zelikow co-wrote an article with John Deutsch in 1998 speculating on what would be the likely political, social, and psychological consequences of a massive Pearl Harbor-style attack on America, such as the destruction of the World Trade Center. What would have happened if the World Trade Center had been blown up in 1993, he says. So in that article, imagining the catastrophic event, Zelikow is basically, you know, 2 years before 9/11, he's envisioning exactly what's going to happen after 9/11. The end of liberty, you know, stampede to war, yada, yada, the whole thing. He predicted it in this article he published 2 years before 9/11. So Zelikow, I think, wrote the script for 9/11 or co-wrote it with other people. He wrote the script for what was going to happen. Big Muslim attack, blame it on bin Laden. They all wrote that years before 9/11. And Zelikow, the guy who wrote the script, was then made the czar of the 9/11 Commission. And he wrote the entire 9/11 Commission report in chapter outline before the commission even existed. And that is admitted in a New York Times published book by a top New York Times journalist. So the whole thing was a complete whitewash. And Keene and Hamilton were just these politicians that they picked to be the figureheads. Zelikow wrote the whole report, got it rubber stamped, put it out there, and it was all garbage. And the whole outline of the 9/11 Commission report was probably written in the late 1990s.
They kept saying we were set up to fail.
Yeah, Keene and Hamilton knew they were set up to fail. They knew they were, and I think the reason they said this was they realized that history will look back on this, and history will say 9/11 was a murderous coup d'etat. It led to the murder of 20-30 million people around the world. It destroyed the American empire. It put the American military into the Middle East where it shouldn't have been at a time when the real issues were Russia and China. It was a disaster, and history will look back on these guys, and they're saying, hey, we were just set up to fail. It's not our fault.
Yeah, someone might say, hey, Eddie, why are you guys talking about this? I say, look, Joe Rogan's talking about it. So, you know, the whole world or our neighbors here think that Islam is somehow connected with terrorism, Islam, you know, and that was the catalyst to go into all these countries, and people are putting slogans, never forget, and we're trying to push back and say, hold on, never forget, Islam, Muslims had nothing to do with 9/11. Can we unequivocally say that?
Well, Muslims were the scapegoats and the patsies. The whole point of 9/11 was to blame Muslims. That's how it was scripted. That's how it was executed. That's what it was all about. But Muslims are supposed to be telling the truth. You know, I've been reading Quran regularly for a while now. And one thing that really jumps out at me is that the stories of the prophets, all the prophets, they come and they're rejected by the people of power in distinction, the malat, in whatever society they're in. And they come with the truth. And they're persecuted for this. And everybody has a choice. You can stand up with the people of truth, or you can stand with the mala of the Firaun, the Pharaoh, or you can, you know, stand with the mala of the people who persecuted Lut, you know, the people of Sodom, or you can stand with the mala of the people who you know, hamstrung the she camel of the Prophet Salih. You can stand with the bad guys who are standing against the truth, where kedhaba, they deny the truth, they cry lies to the truth. You have the choice of either standing with those people or standing with the voice of prophetic truth. That's so basic to what it means to be a Muslim. And I really implore that all of our Muslim brothers and sisters, you know, get up and follow the real example of the prophets.
When you see in history examples of things coming out of truth that you couldn't even fathom, you would think that no way that this would happen. It was uncovered. For instance, and this is just to point out an example, that if these things happened in the past, why would something like this, you know, when you have experts coming on to question, to who say that this just is nonsensical, it doesn't make sense, and you compare it with what we said, the half a billion that was spent on fake terrorist videos, mass deception, you know, propaganda, manipulating the people's minds, and then the two events that come to mind, the Gulf of Tonkin and Northwoods. Mm-hmm. For people that don't know what those are, you can go look that up, and you can see this is a reality that, you know, things were exposed and they're documented. What are Northwoods and the Gulf of Tonkin?
Well, those both happened in the same time frame. Northwoods was in 1962. The U.S. military leaders of that time wanted a war with Cuba and a war with Russia. They believed that they needed to defeat Russia before Russia developed a robust nuclear capability. So they set up this operation to provoke a war with Cuba, which could have been extended to Russia. It's called Northwoods. And they were going to murder Americans with bombings in American cities. They were going to sink an American ship. They were going to stage a fake airliner shootdown. They were going to load a plane with 200 CIA agents posing as college students under carefully developed fake identities. And that plane was going to fly towards Cuba and then cross paths with an unmanned drone, land at an Air Force base, and the drone would continue towards Cuba and then be blown up by remote control. The next day, every newspaper in America would have a screaming front page headline, evil communists under Fidel Castro murder 200 innocent American college students. And they, so this was drafted under the authority of General Lyman Lemnitzer, who was the head of the Joint Chiefs of Staff at the time. It was signed off on by every single member of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, which is the top of the American military command chain. It was sent to John F. Kennedy's desk for his approval, and Kennedy and or his Secretary of Defense, McNamara, rejected it. And that's the only reason it didn't happen. It was ready to go within a month. As for the Gulf of Tonkin incident, that's what got us into Vietnam all out. It happened in 1964. Actually, it didn't happen in 64 because there was no such attack. The American media told Americans that an American ship had been attacked by the North Vietnamese, but it was garbage. It was nonsense. There had been no such attack. An American ship was set up to fire some guns into the fog and say, oh, we were attacked. So that's just one of the many, many orchestrated false flags or war trigger events that have been behind every single major American war since the Mexican War.
So when you bring this up, this is substantiated. This is something that you can't argue, right? These two incidences?
Absolutely. And most of the others, too. I mean, nobody today argues that the supposed Mexican attack on America that launched the Mexican War of 1847 actually happened. Everybody admits it never happened. But the newspapers of that time stampeded America into the war on Mexico, where we stole half Mexico's territory, based on this lie. And likewise, nobody thinks that the Spanish really sunk the USS Maine in 1898. All historians admit that the Spanish didn't do that. Yet the official story of the time, which led America to attack Spain and steal all of its colonial possessions, was based on this lie. And everybody today, all historians admit that it was a lie.
So Joe Rogan knows this. He talks about this, the Gulf of Tonkin, mm-hmm. Northwoods. So his position now with this 9/11, mm-hmm. I know he's had on guests before. You've even had Trump, who actually questioned. Didn't he also question the official story at one time?
Regarding on 9/11 itself, Trump was asked about it, and he said there had to have been explosives. This couldn't have happened.
That's
without
our
explosives.
President now. He said that.
And you know what else he said? He said that Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama created ISIS. And he was largely right about that, too.
Mm-hmm. So how do people, like, conveniently, you've had so many people, they were questioning this official story. So many people that people don't know about, they don't get the media attention. Because obviously it's not the cool thing. It's not trending to go ahead and question the official story, which was set up to fail, like they said, the commissioners.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's trending among people who like to think of themselves as actually paying attention to what's really going on in the world. You know, it is trending among smart people. But there's the problem is that there is this kind of, you know, this kind of division between a lot of the folks who figured this stuff out. They think of the ordinary people as sheeple, you know, they kind of look down on them. And I think that really the lesson of 9/11 and similar events is that ordinary people actually are okay. They have good hearts. There is a human fitra, which is that we will fight if we are attacked. We'll fight defensively, but we don't really want to run out and go attack somebody and steal their stuff. And so the psychopathic leaders have to find a way to brainwash ordinary people into waging aggressive war. Mm-hmm. And that's what things like 9/11, the Gulf of Tonkin incident, the Pearl Harbor 8-point plan, that was a deception too. The sinking of the Lusitania that got us, helped get us into World War I, Zimmerman telegram that helped get us into World War I. All of these, every American war has been started with these kinds of lies. And that's because ordinary people have good hearts, mm-hmm. and they can't, you can't get them to go off and wage aggressive war unless you brainwash them with a big lie.
Now, you wouldn't yourself, if you thought, I mean, you are an academic, you're a professor at the Wisconsin University.
Not anymore.
Yeah. You put your livelihood and everything on the line. Mm-hmm. But you would have not come to the point that you actually ended up accepting Islam, if Islam was about terrorism, violence, as Dan Crenshaw tries to make it.
Of course. Yeah, I got interested in Islam through the work of the traditionalist scholars like René Guénon. And I got interested in the Moroccan Sufi tradition and the Karamat al-Awliya, the stories of Moroccan Sufis. That's what my PhD dissertation is about. And I could always see that Islam had a whole lot in common with Christianity, except it made a lot more sense to me anyway. I was born in a Unitarian family, or we could call them a family of lapsed Unitarians, which is about as lapsed as you can get. But Unitarians are people of reason, and they believe in the oneness of God, not the Trinity. And so that's my background. And so it was pretty easy to come to Islam. And so for me, Islam is a robust tradition that actually fits the modern world better than alternatives, because it works with reason. I mean, the Quran keeps telling us to use our reason. Over and over, it tells us to use our reason. And it does. We aren't burdened with things like the Trinity and these other sort of mystifications that I think cause problems with Christianity. But, I mean, I have great respect for my Christian brothers and sisters. I know that people in the Christian tradition can achieve sainthood, just like people in the Islamic tradition can. And it's crazy that the world has been brainwashed into thinking that these religions are violent, that they're problems. They're actually more like solutions.
Mm-hmm. And this is important because it's a fact that most of the time, if you do mention Islam to just an average layman who's been brainwashed and, you know, poisoned by the media deception and manipulation, they'll right away attribute what? To Islam, 9/11.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's sad to see. It's nonsensical. Usually when you just, you know, you're awoke and you start to look into these facts out there, that many of the things you've mentioned, but many people right away, mm-hmm. it's like, oh, those guys, the 9/11 people, mm-hmm. who want to come over here and kill us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they designed it that way, of course. You know, Philip Zelikow, the guy who I not only wrote the 9/11 Commission report, but as I said, I think he probably was involved in planning 9/11 itself. He's a specialist in public myths, so he knows that these sort of sacred myths are often founded on human sacrifice, on sacrificial events. Pagan religions are all based on human sacrifices. So 9/11 was set up ahead of time as a kind of a mass human sacrifice event to create this new myth, of, an anti-Islamic myth, a myth that we have to go and attack Muslim countries. And that myth has had one main beneficiary, which is the extremist faction in the state of Israel that doesn't want to make peace with its neighbors, which are Muslim-majority countries, doesn't want to make peace with its indigenous Palestinian population, which is, even though there are plenty of Christians, it is Muslim-majority. And I do think that's a lot of the reason for 9/11. Philip Zelikow is a Zionist. The neoconservatives are almost all Jewish Zionists. And those people, I think, knew that Israel couldn't continue on this path of expansionism, ethnic cleansing, and supremacism unless they had the full weight of the American empire behind it, smashing all of their enemies. Mm-hmm. And that's, I think, the primary reason for 9/11.
But some people, now they hear you mentioning Jewish and other things synonymous with that, and they think, oh, this guy is now promoting anti-Semitism, you know, he hates Jews. And this myth also that's perpetuated that Islam teaches Muslims to hate Jews. What do you say about that?
Well, obviously, Islam is not anti-Jewish. The Quran retells the stories of the prophets, most of whom are Jewish prophets. In fact, if we consider Jesus or Isa alayhi salam as a he was Jewish too in that sense, right? So almost the vast majority of the prophets in the Quran are Jewish prophets, and the Quranic rendition of their stories actually elevates them. It makes it clear that they're pure, spotless voices of truth, telling God's truth. So, you know, we see ourselves as being in the same tradition as Jewish people. And if we actually sit down and talk with religious Jews, as I did recently with a guy named Duvid, who's a very strong advocate of the Jewish religion, we find we have so much in common with them that, you know, a person who is a truly religious, traditional Jew like Duvid is going to have a lot in common with us. The people that we have more of a problem with, I think, are the post-religious people who, you know, they're no longer really religious Jews, but they have to grasp onto something, so they grasp onto the state of Israel.
And they're actually atheists. Many of them are pagans,
yeah,
atheists.
Israel was founded by atheists.
And these are not religious Orthodox Jews that we're talking about here.
Right. So the problem is this problem of idolatry. And this is a problem with Christians, too. The Christian Zionists are also guilty of this idolatry of worshiping the state of Israel. And that's really the main problem that we have with people who consider themselves Jews. And we certainly don't have that problem with all people who consider themselves Jews. There's Neturei Karta, a great anti-Zionist Jewish group. There are lots of free thinkers in the Jewish population. Some of them are not religious, others are. And they're coming on my radio show all the time, telling the truth, standing up for the truth. There's that prophetic voice of truth can be found among all sorts of people, including lots of Jewish people.
Yeah, I have a good friend, Miko Pillit. You know, have you heard of him?
He's been on my show.
Oh, he has?
Yeah.
He's an Israeli. He's Jewish. Mm-hmm. He's somebody who's trying to get the truth out there regarding the oppression of mm-hmm. the Palestinian people. His grandfather was one of the signers of the Declaration of Independence for Israel.
Yeah,
and he's Israeli. He's a Jew, but it's an example of someone who's on the side of getting truth out.
That's right.
You know, so and I like to mention that it's very important that Jews, you know, throughout history have always come and sought refuge in the Muslim lands. From persecution, mm-hmm. and particularly Christian persecution, if you want to be specific, mm-hmm. and Muslims, if we hated Jews, you would have they would have a home, a refuge to come, you mm-hmm. know, to come and take refuge in. And Muslims, you know, the Albanians had a term Besa; they'd give the Besa, you know, their word that they would protect them, and in Bosnia and, mm-hmm. and many places in the Muslim world, you saw this. Mm-hmm. David Wasserstein. Mm-hmm. He wrote the paper in the JC Journal where it's titled "Islam Saved the Jewry, the Jewish People." Mm-hmm. So this just destroys that myth.
That's right. Yeah, from you know, there were some problems between Muslims and Jews at the very early stages. And then there have been the problems relating to Zionism in the last century. But other than that, Jews and Muslims have gotten along pretty well. In particular, Jews have found that because we Muslims are bound to protect people of the book, including Christians as well as Jews, and we're bound to protect religious freedom in general and try to solve problems between these groups that get into conflicts, that the Muslim world has usually been a pretty good place for Jews. And you know, at the time of the Ottomans, there were a lot of Jews who were fleeing Western Europe for the Ottoman lands for protection. So it's unfortunate that this Zionist movement has caused so much havoc in relations between Jews, Christians, and Muslims. And probably, if we're going to solve this problem, I think that Jews, Christians, and Muslims need to be sort of central to talking about how we can get beyond this problem of Zionism. And honestly, the obvious solution is to have the people of Palestine all be on an equal footing. And this is the solution that the hardcore Zionists can't accept. And today the people of Israel, for the most part, are not on board with this. But more and more thoughtful people, including Jewish people all over the world, see that this kind of apartheid supremacist state of Israel cannot continue for indefinitely. At some point, it's going to have to make peace with its neighbors. And that really means it's going to have to become a normal country where the local people, including the Palestinian ethnic cleansing victims, have the same rights as anybody else.
Mm-hmm. So we want people to never forget that Islam, which simply means to acquire peace by submitting your will to the will of the one who created you, the one that Jesus submitted to, the one that Moses, Abraham, they were all those who were Muslim. Muslim simply means one who submits his or her will to the creator of the heavens and earth. And Islam is clear that just taking one innocent soul is as if you killed all of mankind. So this absurdity, you know, that Islam has something to do with motivating people to go ahead and blow up, you know, buildings and innocent people, this is just blown out of the water. This is nonsensical. It doesn't make sense. So never forget, Muslims, Islam, true Muslims, one who would want to achieve that peace with their creator, with humanity, do not want to die with innocent blood on their hands, because that's the first thing you're going to be accountable for on the day of judgment in front of your creator. And if you're a Muslim, you believe in the paradise, along with believing in the one and only one creator, the pure monotheism. You believe in the hellfire and the paradise, and we want to stay far away from the hellfire. So no Muslim is trying to kill any innocent human being.
Absolutely. And that, what's the definition of terrorism? It's intentionally targeting innocent civilians for political purposes. So no Muslim can be a terrorist. And indeed, in the classical Islamic tradition, we're not allowed to burn crops, you know, to burn people's houses. Even if you're at war and fighting desperately for your lives and for the lives of your loved ones, you can't do those things. You can't kill innocent people. And, you know, Muslims more than anyone else have this, although Christian just war theory has something pretty similar. So this notion of religious terrorism, Islamic terrorism, is nonsense. It's actually the atheist world that doesn't have any limits anymore. And so they're the ones who are willing to kill civilians, and they're the ones who are killing the civilians. And each big war kills more civilians. World War I, I think it was something like a third of the casualties were civilians. World War II, it was two-thirds, maybe three-quarters of the casualties were civilians. And it's expected that if there's World War III, al-Dubillah, it'll be 98% of the casualties will be civilians. And that's evil, and that's wrong. And Muslims are in the forefront of people saying that.
Mm-hmm. I hope this gets to, God willing, Dan Crenshaw. Mm-hmm. And if anybody's open, genuine, sincere, you know, this is just common sense. Mm-hmm. It's not nonsense like he was spewing. And hopefully Joe Rogan, who's really toned it down, much respect mm-hmm. for that. But hopefully he seems like an open-minded person, and I'd love for him to have you on the show discuss many of these things.
I would too. You know, yeah. I think we talked about Joe last time I was yeah. here several years ago, and at that point he was saying some pretty crazy things. Looks like he's maybe been listening to you, Eddie.
Hopefully, yeah. So hopefully we can, and this is how you can have a nice healthy dialogue to bring on people, you know, from this side, from, you know, academics, from the Islamic side, and come on and then have a nice open dialogue. And this mm-hmm. is how you to get those beliefs challenged, and let's look mm-hmm. at the evidence.
Mm-hmm. It's hard finding reasonable people who have, you know, once they get, you know, this bitten by the bug of Islamophobia, it's sometimes hard to talk to them. You know, I've tried it with a few of them, but there are a lot of people who are sort of loosely in that camp who are reasonable people. But so, and I like to think that some of them, like there are a couple of Dutch guys who are in that Islamophobic party who've actually come to Islam. Mm-hmm. So maybe some of the most hardcore crazies, like this Crenshaw, if they suddenly noticed the truth, it would impact them strongly enough that who knows where they would end up.
Yeah, there was just not too long ago, recently, a Dutch politician. He was the right hand for Geert Wilders. Mm-hmm. You've heard of him. He yeah. accepted Islam. He was looking at it from the point where he was about to write a book, you know, a reference book to all of these different things that attack, that someone can go and look into if they wanted to disprove Islam or have their arguments set. So then in his investigation of Islam, this is an Islamophobe, he wanted to ban Islam. Mm-hmm. And from there, he started to do his research. And then, you know, he reached out to Muslim scholars. And from there, mm-hmm. he ended up accepting Islam. It's amazing.
Right. Yeah. Well, that's been one of the ironical effects of 9/11, is that a lot of folks have looked into 9/11, they've looked into this war on Islam and all the propaganda against Islam, and the propaganda is so bad, it's so divorced from reality, that once they actually start looking at the reality, they sometimes are impacted so strongly by it that they end up coming to Islam. So there may actually be more people coming to Islam because of this.
Yeah. Well, I want to thank you. How can people get in touch with you if or, you know, look into some more of your work? They can reach you at...
Well, my website is truthjihad.com. That's all run together, truthjihad. And my email is the same thing, truthjihad@gmail.com.
Can you, are you actually, I mean, if the people, the different universities wanted to invite you to speak, you know, some of the student associations, you can come on and accept those invitations?
I would be happy to.
Yeah.
I've done that back in 2006 and 2007. I had a lot of invitations through student associations. Since then, not so many, and there may be opposition. The Zionist groups really don't like me. So if you're willing to stand up for the truth and take some hits from those who don't want this point of view to be represented, please, I'd be happy to come speak.
And we can get you, God willing, on the Joe Rogan Show, and would you be happy to sit across from Dan Kershaw, have a nice little dialogue debate?
Absolutely. And I promise not to call him a one-eyed Dajjal. If he promises not to call me a conspiracy theorist.
All right, thank you so much.
Okay,
thank you,
Eddie.
Thank you, Doctor, for Dr. Baer, for being with us here.
Okay, thank you.
And thank you guys for tuning in here to The Dean Show. Subscribe if you haven't already. Hit the notification bell and continue to tune in here to The Dean Show. We covered a lot of interesting facts, not fiction, but I want you to go away with remembering. Never forget what? That Islam and Muslims had nothing to do with 9/11, because we know what Islam stands for. Islam says, ISLAM, Islam says love all mankind. And how are you going to love all mankind if you're blowing up all mankind? It doesn't make any sense. Use your mind, your heart, and if you're sincere, continue watching The Dean Show, and the truth will set you free. We'll see you next time. Until then, peace be with you. Assalamu alaikum.